It was August 31st, 1920, when station 8MK in Detroit broadcast the very first radio news program. It's been nearly a century, and the war for readers, listeners, and viewers continues. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the studios of WUSF-TV in Tampa, I'm Carson Cooper. I'm joined by USF Journalism Professor Wayne Garcia and Chris Wilkerson, Special Projects Director for the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And by the way, guys, I might want to bring radio into this conversation here in just a moment or so. And we're also going to take questions from our studio audience here from Leadership Tampa during the second half of the program. But first, Wayne Garcia, let me start with you. We've been hearing about the demise of newspapers at the hands of the Internet for years now. Is it actually going to happen?
You know, there's an element of print that will remain, you know, forever. I think that, you know, we're going to cut down trees and make paper and have smudgy ink and things. But what we're really seeing is more niche publications. Community weeklies are doing well. The big dailies that sort of had a near monopoly on the information flow, the distribution process of the majority of information, and certainly the advertising revenue, you know, that model is dead. And so the dailies are really, really struggling. They're, you know, trying to hang on to that audience. But the audience that's coming up, and certainly millennials, for instance, the students that I teach journalism students who have never picked up a newspaper. So it's an amazing change in terms of that delivery. Now, having said that, information is, we have more information than we've ever had before. So it's not an information or a news problem. In the newspaper industry, it's simply a business model, and I think Kelly hit the nail on the head. In an age where we get everything instantly in our pocket and we have the entire world's knowledge in our smartphone, in addition to cat videos where they play the piano that are very cute, you know, it does seem very inefficient to deliver this legacy product in what looks like an old-fashioned way.
I want to talk more about who's gathering that news for us in just a moment, but Chris Wilkerson, when Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway, sees something in Media General's newspapers except for the Tampa Tribune, ouch, that has got to hurt. What does that say about the Tribune and about its current revenue model?
Well, sure. The Tribune's definitely, it's not a super secret that those guys are in trouble. I think maybe even more insulting is that the price that they got for the company was almost identical to the price that they sold the land for to a developer who wants to build across the river from downtown. So what are you saying about the value of the actual company,
right,
if it's the same value as the dirt went for? So, you know, for the Trib, I think those guys have got a tremendous opportunity going forward to really reinvent themselves in a new model, not try to go find a big clunky space where they can have a bunch of reporters clacking away on laptops, but really kind of rethink their model and how they get news to. They're being forced out of their building. It's an opportunity for the Trib, in my opinion.
Seems like since day one, I mean, back in the days of CompuServe and Prodigy, that newspapers have been in search of a viable internet business model. And so far, I think all they've come up with is the paywall. Are paywalls working? And do they make? Is it working to make visitors subscribe?
Right. So the newspaper business model leaned, especially the dailies, leaned really heavily on classified ads back in the day. And that was kind of the first thing to go as soon as Craigslist and all that came up. You know, it was impossible, not impossible, but it was definitely difficult to pay for all of that journalism through that part of the advertising. The rest of the advertising has kind of dropped off as we've gone over the past 10 or 15 years. And they've tried to replace, you know, they call it print dollars and digital dimes. Okay, mm-hmm. So you could make a buck with a print ad where you can only make a dime on a digital ad. So that's obviously going to be way harder to pay for the employees that are going out and gathering the news and all that kind of stuff. That's the real conversation to have. There's no doubt that we're all going to digital. The question is, how can we still pay the people that are doing the work, that are delivering you the news? If you still value that news, You get everything else online pretty much for free, but that news still has to be generated by somebody who's got to pay a mortgage. So that's the complicated model that nobody's really figured out. The paywalls, they work in some ways, sure. I mean, our company has a paywall on a lot of the stuff that we do, and we're moving to a model where we're trying to find the stuff we know you want the most and kind of sneak that behind a paywall too. But it's a complicated process that definitely nobody's figured out yet.
Wayne Garcia, Kurt Loft, a former science writer for the Tribune, told the Columbia Journalism Review that the Tampa Tribune covered journalism from the trenches. The Times covered it from the clouds. One was scrappy, one was lofty. But the point is, the Bay Area had two voices, two newspapers. It's been this way for decades, and we've been kind of lucky in that respect. Many major markets don't have two papers. Is our luck running out?
Our luck has run out, I would say for a lot of people, I'm not even sure they have one voice now, because you know, you could choose geographically, you could choose. So if you were in Tampa, you could choose the Tampa Tribune sort of to be your dominant voice. You could, if you're in St. Pete, you would choose the Times. You could choose in terms of political bent. Okay, so one was a little more conservative and one was more liberal. You had a lot of choices in that way. And I think people now have so many other choices that I'm not sure that if we said, hey, you know, which is your indispensable paper? I noticed on Twitter today, one of the political operatives has been running a sort of love my newspaper hashtag, and people are putting down the newspapers that they love. And a lot of people, even in this area, are putting down New York Times, The Guardian of London, the local paper, not quite as much because of that disruption. And the business model is hard enough to figure out, but the real fundamental thing, and I think this is where the local media hasn't really caught up on this, the real fundamental disruption in terms of news is that everyone now is part of the news process. All of you all are consumers of news and information. Everybody in this audience is also a producer and editor of news. Doesn't make you a journalist, but think about it. You curate and aggregate information on your Facebook page for your friends. Oh, look at this. You should see this too. Now, you didn't produce that information originally, but we see now major news events are being covered by people who happen to be there with a cell phone. So you have this thing where journalists used to be the producers, and the audience were the consumers. Now journalists are both consumers and producers, audiences, consumers, and producers, and none of us really understand how to make a lot of sense out of the glut of information. It's been likened to trying to drink out of a fire hose full open. You know, you have so much. What do you believe?
Right, and you're also the distributor now. So it used to be, you know, we had a department at the newspaper called circulation, and they were in charge of going out and finding the audience. Then we evolved over to the point where the journalists on Twitter and on Facebook were trying to find audience and build a Twitter following. And now what we've realized is our stuff does, and we pay very close attention to how well our stuff does. We know to the click how many times somebody looked at each story. Now we realize that those stories do best when you guys share them, when you guys see those stories and say, oh, my group needs to see this story. So you've become our circulation department. Especially on social.
Kind of a deja vu here, this internet versus newspapers things. Back in the 30s, it was radio versus newspapers. The staticky upstart radio soon figured out it could deliver news directly to consumers. No need for newspapers at the time, some thought. Just like today, newspapers were livid back then about radio using its news copy unauthorized. Now, I'm happy to say radio these days is doing its own news thing, but radio is facing a new set of challenges these days as well. Right, Wayne Garcia?
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got terrestrial versus satellite, although I think the satellite is not performing quite the way that I think the satellite companies would like it to perform. But a lot of what you see in radio is this deconstruction of traditional watching. And before we went on air, the general manager here said that, you know, most people still watch television sort of in the traditional sense. But the growing way that it's consumed, and certainly among the millennial audience, is a deconstructed way where individual videos, individual sound bites, and so everyone's trying to figure out how do you have that virality? How do you get people to share information? It's real easy to share videos. Everyone sort of likes to see them. It's real easy to share visuals and photos. They seem to be dramatic. audio is one of those things. There's actually been a lot of articles written about why doesn't audio go viral. You think about it. You go, oh, wow, listen to that. I got to share that. And so that's one of the challenges of radio, that it's a marvelous medium. Theater of the mind, it can really put you in places that no other medium can put you in. And yet its traditional way of being consumed now faces this challenge to make that technological leap.
Back on November 22nd, the Washington Post published an article called NPR is Graying and Public Radio is Worried. And the essence of the piece is that older listeners are, quite frankly, getting old. And listening is dropping among younger audiences who are drifting to, as you pointed out, on-demand services and other ways of getting news. Is that bond between listeners and local stations fraying? And what can radio do to solve that problem? Chris Wilkerson.
So I think that you guys probably have data on how much of your product is consumed in a car versus how much of your product is consumed in a kitchen during a cooking hour or whatever. So you guys know kind of where people are when they're consuming your product. So to Wayne's point about satellite radio, I think that there's definitely still plenty of opportunity for you guys to capture audience.
Don't feel bad if you don't have an answer, because I don't think anyone has an answer at this point.
No, if somebody had an answer, they'd be a consultant making a lot of money right now.
Right. Well, as long as it's still illegal for you to text while you're in your car, you're going to be listening to radio. Now, whether you can capture those people instead of Bubba the Love Sponge, that's the trick.
Right.
You know. So you're going to have to jump through some flaming hoops and be entertaining in that way. Which is what all media is having to do. You know, we all have to kind of find a way to be more entertaining and more engaging and really force people to need our product to get through their day.
And this is where radio really has an advantage over some of the other media, and that is that it does have personalities. It is personality driven. So you hear unique voices, unique personalities. You think about those great DJs of old, if you're old enough to remember those. And you hear somebody's voice like Carson's, you know, very recognizable. So radio's always had that ability to brand the people who are delivering information to you. That's the hot new thing in journalism. You have to become a brand. You know, newspapers never wanted that. They didn't want to know, you know, they didn't want, like, the audience to be fixated on who the byline was. And I remember when I was a newspaper reporter at the Tribune and the Times, you'd run into people all the time, and, like, I have no, you know, they don't read bylines. They just read the stories. There wasn't sort of that personality to it. But now you see newspaper reporters on a national level and some on the local level really trying to brand themselves so they can spin out into their own media endeavors, like a Nate Silver or any number of people, Vox Media, other things have all started from people who, you know, Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal and his technology. So branding is really important. I think that's where radio has that advantage.
All right. I want to hear more from the up to now silent studio audience here, members of Leadership Tampa, when we come back. We're talking about the media landscape with a little journalism thrown in here with USF journalism professor Wayne Garcia and Chris Wilkerson, special project director for the Tampa Bay Business Journal. We want to hear from you as well on this topic. Post your questions and comments on our Facebook page. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Carson Cooper. My guests are USF journalism professor Wayne Garcia and Chris Wilkerson, special projects director for the Tampa Bay Business Journal. We are coming to you from the studios of WUSF-TV with a studio audience, members of Leadership Tampa, who are anxious to join in the conversation. We're talking about journalism and the media landscape, and our first question comes from
Bob Binkarowski, assistant treasurer at TECO Energy. Could you speak for a moment about regulation in the news industry? Because it seems to me that if these trends progress, at some point you may have more regulatory bodies stepping in to verify the veracity of information, given that, you've hinted that it's been weaponized at this point.
It is a good question, and I think you look at other nations and other models, and ours is certainly not unique, but the leading voice in a free press. And so we have a First Amendment. It guarantees that free press. So I doubt, barring any Bill of Rights changes, that you're really going to see more regulations. Sort of the genie is out of the bottle. It's how could you regulate now the flow of bloggers and citizens and professional journalists and you know, other people in this process? I think actually the thing that you may see at some point is more of a British model where the government actually funds more of, although the trend here has been less, because as some of these more trusted voices that are going out and doing work that you can't just do by flipping your camera on and taking a picture of an event, but investigative work and, you know, finding out where, you know, politicians are stealing money or people are doing bad things, increasingly is getting harder and harder to fund. And, you know, one of the models that's been talked about is that a government funding issue? Is that a nonprofit foundation funding issue? Because it's not something that the public seems to really want to pay for, but it seems like something that we need. And when you have something the public doesn't want to pay for, but that you need anyway, that sounds like a government function, right? It's like that's what they tax us for, is stuff that we don't really want, but that we need. So I doubt there'll be more regulation, but I'm a real big believer in the antidote for bad information is more information. And so I think regulation would do less to bring us more information, because ultimately the truth comes out. It's just a really, unlike the disruptive process of when radio first came around and when TV first came around, I think those media were very easy to understand. You sat in front of TV and you watched things move around. What's hard about that? Our current technologies and the things we have to use and assimilate are incredibly difficult to understand. And you struggle with that. Older people definitely struggle with that. The millennials struggle with that. We think of them as very tech savvy. They're not. They know how to use certain things, but in the overall sense, no one has really learned to use all of these tools.
I would also wonder who would be the regulators. who would regulate the regulators?
Yeah, and you'd never find anybody that wanted to do that for a living if somebody was clamping down on it in that way.
Bob, thank you so much. Great question. And our next question is from...
Hi, my name is Shilpa Saxena, and I'm with SaveAMed Institute. I'm a physician, and I take care of a lot of patients trying to help them reverse chronic disease. And one of the biggest triggers is stress. And stress is related to our perception of the world, and the information that we are receiving from media tends to be quite negative, murders and crimes. And so has there ever been a community that has actually engaged in dominant positive communication, and what would that be like?
Wow, what a world.
I know. The answer is no, there hasn't been a community that I know of. I mean, anything's possible. And yeah, that would be an awesome world. It is a really I've worked at big newspapers, small newspapers, and now, you know, in academia, and then I was in politics for 9 years, so I saw all sides of the equation, and it is overwhelmingly negative. It is stress creating. I think I remember seeing or reading Deepak Chopra, who said, if you really want to change your life, stop reading a newspaper and consuming news for 30 days. It's like a detox. I do think, and this is one of the results you see of the economics of news, as there are fewer and fewer reporters to tell different stories beyond police department handout press releases, the auto accident of the day, the shooting of the day. You do, I think, they go to news that's easier to produce and with a smaller staff. So I think that's a very real phenomenon. We also have a world that's crazier and you just can't ignore. So how do you ignore the Planned Parenthood shooting, Aurora Theater shooting? So there's a combination of all of that. And I just think that there is a market for people who want to see a better balance. Unfortunately, that usually goes to like publications that are either really in the tank pro-business to the point where they're supporting really, you know, sketchy businesses or people who aren't that interesting, or they write, you know, and they portray a world that doesn't really exist. So the media we have, it portrays a world that's so violent that it seems hellish, and that's not right. But the solutions have been far too much to the other side. And, you know, newspapers know this, TV stations know this, they're very aware of this. I think they just don't have the resources anymore to help that balance to some degree and make those decisions, you know, and maybe the next generation of editors can do better.
Well, sure, an apartment fire is an incredibly easy thing to cover, and it doesn't cost you any money, and all you really need is a cameraman to go out and shoot it, and it gives you a minute of content for your evening newscast, where going and doing a research on a politician and all that kind of stuff is a lot more expensive. It's a lot more labor intensive. So 100% you're right on that. My thought on your question is that social media gives all of you the opportunity to be your own sort of news editor. You know, your Facebook feed is something you created. Your Twitter feed is something you created. So it's up to you to kind of to get rid of the voices that are in that box that are causing you stress. I left Facebook about 2.5 years ago. It was the best decision of my life. Twitter is a little, there's a little bit less social pressure to follow your friends in the same way that following your friends does on Facebook. When you follow your friends on Facebook and they fill your feed with stuff that's stressing you out, all of you have those friends that are commenting on stuff, and Facebook is forcing that in front of you all the time. You know, it's up to us to make that feed into something that is useful to us, something that is helping to give us the information that we need. In my company's perspective, to grow your business potentially, but in another person's perspective, to enrich their life in some way. So that's kind of what social media does for us in a way that the evening news and the newspaper have never really been able to do.
As far as stress in the news go, I would just say this anecdotally. What stresses me out is when gas prices go way up or the housing market tanks. But knowing why these things happen, which is what media are supposed to do, explain why things happen, for me anyway, kind of reduces stress. It doesn't make the gas prices go down, but at least knowing why helps a lot. Our next question is from
Al Erdman, Hillsborough Community College. When I was in journalism school in 101, they taught us how to write in an inverted triangle so that, you know, you would put most of your information up front, and as people trailed off, you had the less important information. I remember, you know, during Watergate, for example, you'd have a huge front page article, and then there'd be two or three pages of the newspaper behind it. And the research I read the other day said that something like 3% of the people ever make it off the front page. How do you, as journalism, fulfill that want to inform people if they don't want to be informed?
It'd be great to get a Watergate. That sounds awesome. Those don't come up very often, but actually they're out there. It's just nobody can pay somebody to go research them and dig them up and do them right. So, you know, to that question about the inverted pyramid, man, I'm writing stories that you can completely read at a traffic light in your car. Okay, so that's the story that I'm writing needs to get you everything you need to know on your phone while you're sitting at the traffic light waiting to turn left and go to work or go to the dentist's office or whatever it is. That's how long of your attention I have. And just like I said, with all these metrics, I know how long you spent with that story. And a lot of times I know how deep into the story you went before you scrolled back up and went back your other way.
Chris, I hope that's a red light you're talking about there. We have time for one more. All right.
My name's Lauren Valiente. I'm an attorney with Foley and Lardner. Professor Garcia, when you pointed out how difficult it is for media or for audio media to go viral, the one exception I thought of was the Serial podcast, which seemed to capture the national zeitgeist last year, became the most downloaded podcast, and at least from a listener's perspective, really seemed to be a great example of objective, long-form investigative journalism told with integrity that intersected with really great storytelling techniques. The reporter really made you feel like you were taking that journey with her, and she wasn't, for the most part, reporting as she was investigating. So my question is, do you think something like Serial is a one-off, or do you think there are lessons in there that maybe show examples of how audio journalism can take advantage of the new media?
Yeah, no, I love Serial, and I think there is definitely room for long-form audio podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I adore them, and I think that You know, it's the next evolution of radio. It still hasn't worked out, sort of the technology and the platform. How do you get your podcast? Well, some people download the MP3 and some get iTunes and some subscribe through this. And it hasn't worked out sort of the technique of delivering it to you. But I think they've really gotten good at working out the programming of it. But I would say the people who listened to Serial, there wasn't a virality to it. Like everybody shared, oh my God, can you believe that? Everybody talked about it and they listened to the entire episodes. The only thing that sort of went viral was the Shrimp Shack thing meme, you know, because that's the only thing that's really go viral are memes. But I would say I listened to a quirky thing called The Mystery Show, Serial, This American Life, and it's sort of the normal things and a lot of unusual, abnormal things, Startup. I mean, a lot of business people out there. If you haven't listened to Alex Bloomberg's Startup, they take a company from you know, scratch and through the startup process for the first year to whether they make it or not. So I think there's great storytelling out there in terms of audio, and there's a lot of truth and information that comes through that. It's just those things aren't helping us like at the local media level. We don't have the time or the ability to tell those stories like, in what does that mean for Tampa? Can we do that? Can we have this Tampa life? And that experiment has not been undertaken by anybody yet. And I think that's the great frontier for local media, at least, is you see this in some other areas with startups, and you certainly see it with national media, but we haven't seen it in Tampa Bay. We still are, you know, dealing with basically our legacy media and the things they're trying to create, but we haven't seen sort of that entrepreneurial journalism class rise up and create new products for the most part.
Chris?
Well, I didn't listen to that podcast, but I'm totally with Wayne that that's definitely a frontier. And the, you know, the question of whether there's going to be entrepreneurs pop up and create new journalism outlets is pretty fascinating. You know, the entrepreneurs and the startups that we cover tend to either want to make $1 million or want to solve some kind of societal ill, and whether good journalism definitely doesn't fall into the first category, whether it ever falls into the second category, it'll be interesting to see. So, you know, that's kind of my take on that.
All right, all great questions. Lauren, thank you for that question there. And we are out of time, I'm afraid. Thanks to our studio audience here, members of Leadership Tampa. Great to have you here with us. And thanks to our panelists, USF Journalism Professor Wayne Garcia and Chris Wilkerson, Special Project Director for the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Thank you for being here on Florida Matters.
Thank you for having us.
Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts, engineered by Craig George, and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.